You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Inventing Abstraction, 1910 to 1925, which is currently on view at the Museum of Modern Art, explores the rapid shifts that transformed the rules of art making in the early 20th century. Artists began moving away from making representational art and began creating entirely new forms. The exhibition includes paintings, drawings, prints, and sculptures, as well as musical recordings, dance pieces, and poetry. Inventing Abstraction was organized by Leah Dickerman, curator in the Department of Painting and Sculpture, with curatorial assistant Masha Shlenova.
That's correct. Yeah.
And it runs through April 15th. I'm very pleased that it has brought Leah Dickerman back to our show today. Hello.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
There's a huge graphic on the wall outside the gallery that shows network thinking and traces the connections between artists in the show. Who were the best connected artists? I guess Picasso becomes one of the nexus.
Picasso's a key connecting figure. One of the things that we really wanted to do in the show was to suggest that abstraction wasn't invented by a solitary protagonist, a creative genius sitting under a tree visited by a muse, but rather that it was a relay of ideas that moved through a nexus of artists and intellectuals. And to show this, we created a crazy chart, the one you're talking about, and we put the names of all the artists in the show into an Excel spreadsheet, and we asked ourselves the question of who knows whom. Does Mondrian know Malevich? Does Van Tangerlo know Stiglitz? And every time we got a yes, we drew a line. And of course, we can never really get all the answers. We don't know who ran into each other in the bakery. But it is a visual metaphor for how densely connected the field is. And among these figures, certain names pop out. Kandinsky, Apollinaire, Stiglitz, Marinetti. And one thing that many of the most connected figures have in common is that they're editors. They're editors of these little journals, cultural reviews, that proliferate in the years before World War I.
And isn't that one of the reasons that they could be aware of each other? Because now reproductions were appearing in magazines.
Absolutely. There's a print media revolution. Suddenly, images are moving, can be distributed in this form. And, of course, it's part of a broader shift in the 20th century, a new culture of connectivity with trains and cars and standardized clocks. And
there's a problem with words here, because we have the word abstraction, which means different things to different people. Abstraction can mean something that still continues to refer to the real world, or it can be totally non-representational. And you're using it to cover everything?
No. Of course, there have been forms of abstraction that exist in all different ways, and there are even images that are precursors of what we're talking about, images by artists like Whistler that take pictures up to the brink where you can hardly discern subject matter. But these artists don't jettison the idea that their work is a picture of something. And what we wanted to explore in this show is this moment in which the very idea that a picture shows objects in the world, that a picture is a picture of something, is fundamentally challenged.
But artists like Picasso and Braque and Léger are included here, and they never really totally abandoned the representation.
Well, Picasso and Braque are different in this regard. We start the show with a picture by Picasso, one that he makes in 1910, where he comes up to the brink of abstraction. He creates a picture that, by all appearance, is an abstract picture.
This is Woman with a Mandolin.
Absolutely, that's right. And he makes it when he's in Spain, in Cadaqués, in 1910. And yet he rejects the idea of abstraction philosophically after making this picture. And he actually retrenches. He begins putting fragments of words and body parts and musical instruments into his pictures after that, as if trying to tether it back to the world of things. And so for me, that picture is so interesting because it's an emblem of how difficult it is to think a new idea. And for many of the artists that are looking at what Picasso does, his work, the lesson of cubism, is abstraction.
So he comes up to the line. Matisse does as well in some paintings, I think.
But later.
But a lot of artists cross that line. As I remember it, I don't know whether we finally decided who the first one actually was, but I remember in school, it could have been Kandinsky, it could have been Kupka, it could have been the American Arthur Dove.
Right.
And some of the artists actually post-dated some of their work
absolutely,
to make the claim.
Absolutely.
What struck me as really interesting is that if you speak to the general public, they all hate this idea. And yet artists were drawn to it like honey.
One of the things that I think is so interesting is how it's impossible in 1910, and then it moves like wildfire once the first abstract pictures are shown.
Do we know who did the first one?
No, and I didn't even try to sort that out in certain ways.
I vote for Kupka.
Yeah. Kupka has good claim to it. But what I think is interesting is the advent of abstract pictures works like many scientific discoveries, where you have investigators converging on similar things at the same moment in time, working in different places and with different philosophical foundations.
Well, you have Schoenberg included mm-hmm. here as well. In fact, there is a sound chamber as part of the show organized by WQXR's Q2 because music was also moving in that direction, especially with someone like Schoenberg. Interestingly, Schoenberg was also a very good painter, but he never painted abstract paintings.
Absolutely. And the reason that we have music included is because we all know students of modernism all know that the advent of abstraction in the visual arts and atonal music and modern non-narrative dance and experimental sound poetry line up historically in time. But I think this is far more than coincidental. These are very, very productive relationships. And when the world changes radically and the rules of art making are no longer understood or no longer conventional, then how do artists figure out how to organize a picture again? And one thing that they do is by looking across at what artists in other disciplines are doing, and they take clues and lessons from what they're doing. And there's a story that I love that I've told, and it's become a kind of parable for the show, which is that the artist Francis Picabia tells you that he invents abstraction. Now, they all claim it for themselves, but the story that Picabia tells is that he took one of his cars in 1912, so it's a road trip story, and he drove across England, across France, to pick up his fiancée, Gabrielle Bouffet, in England, and he is, and his companion stopped in a tavern to have too much to drink, and then they got back in the car and they invented abstraction. Well, who are his companions? It's the composer Claude Debussy and the poet Guillaume Apollinaire. So take a poet, a composer, and a visual artist, and put them in a car, and you get abstraction.
Although in the case of Picabia, he's also a Dadaist later in his
career.
Yeah. So you can't trust anything that he says. He once did a really insulting thing to Cézanne. He did a portrait of Cézanne, which was a toy monkey attached to a piece of cardboard. Poor Cézanne. Was unappreciated for so much of his life. Most of the early abstraction seems to come out of cubism, but not all of it. Kandinsky, for example, he seems to be moving away from an interest in folk art.
Kandinsky is interested in folk art, and he's also watching what Picasso has done. Many of these artists have very broad visual repertoires. Kandinsky is important because he starts writing a philosophical treatise on abstraction already in 1909, far, far before he can actually make an abstract picture. But he lays a philosophical foundation for abstraction. And when he shows his first abstract picture in December 1911, he does it in the same month that he publishes this text, so that the combination of text plus painting had a huge generational impact.
Well, Kandinsky believed that since music was abstract, that painting could be abstract.
Yes, and he took a lot of important clues from listening to music. He was highly musically literate, and he paid a lot of attention to Wagner as well as to Schoenberg.
My guest is Leah Dickerman, curator in the Department of Painting and Sculpture, who, with curatorial assistant Masha Chlanova, has put together a show, a large, very exciting show called Inventing Abstraction, 1910 to 1925. It is running at the Museum of Modern Art through April 15th. The poet Guillaume Apollinaire declared that painting was no longer an art of representation, but of creation.
Mm-hmm.
So they were already talking about process in early 20th century?
Yeah, Apollinaire is a fascinating figure. He plays a key role in setting abstraction on the agenda. He was a a media maven, and he ran his own journal called Les Soirées de Paris, in which he essentially made a call out to artists to create abstract pictures. And many artists in his circle responded, and he championed them in the pages of his journal.
And then there's a collaboration between Sonia Delaunay Turk and the poet Blaise Cendrars. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, and in fact, Apollinaire introduced Sonia Delaunay to Blaise Cendrars, and together they created what they called the first simultaneous book, pairing abstract imagery with a stream of consciousness poem that tells the story of a young prostitute named after Joan of Arc who takes a train journey from Moscow to Siberia, off to China, and ends up back in Paris. And the poetic, the poem switches in time frames and visual scenes, so it has a very cinematic feel to it.
There are a number of couples represented in the show. Sonia Delaunay Turk, married to Robert Delaunay. And it's usually assumed that the wife was influenced by the husband. Their work often looks like a dialogue between the two. Do we have any sense of who was doing what first?
Well, when you look at Sonia Delaunay's work and Robert Delaunay's work together, you can see how much they're in dialogue with each other. And together as a couple, their living room becomes a salon for the East and West. Sonia Delaunay is a Russian artist. She's married to a French painter, Robert Delaunay, and she has Russian friends visiting her, staying with them, and then taking the ideas that are being discussed in Paris back to Russia.
And Delaunay had a major impact on a lot of young American artists.
Absolutely. You can see an incredible painting by the American artist Morgan Russell. It's an 11-foot painting that was painted in 1914, which is something of a mashup between Picabia and Delaunay. And in that painting, the sense of ambition for abstraction is so evident. It's extraordinary.
There are a number of American artists who were painting abstract paintings. Most of them went to Europe to make the jump? Could they have done it here?
Some of them, well, Arthur Dove did do it here in the United States, but not without a deep, deep knowledge of European painting. He had spent years in Europe before, but he showed a picture that's a credibly first abstract picture in February 1911 in Alfred Stieglitz's 291 gallery.
Jean Arp and his wife Sophie Taubert are also extensively represented in the show. Was there collaboration similar to the Delaunay's?
Yes, I think of their partnership as one where they both make each other stronger and more important artists. So Sophie Taubert has training in the decorative arts, and she brings some of the interest in the logic of the decorative arts to their work.
She did fabrics and things.
She
like
did
that.
Fabrics and needlepoints, and she and he has a sort of intellectual knowledge of what's going on in different artistic circles. And between the two of them, they create some of the most radical work of the second decade of the 20th century.
He was one of the first, if not the first artist, to incorporate chance into the creation of a work.
And among the first to make an abstract collage.
Now, there are a number of women artists in the show, and the years between 1910 and 1925 were important years for changes for women in society, but why do you think there was such a flourishing at this time, only to kind of be pulled back in the years that followed?
I don't know if they are pulled back in the years that followed, or whether another curatorial review, we would see more women in shows that analyzed abstract work in those years. But what you do see in inventing abstraction is an extraordinary number of women who are key pioneers of abstract art. Some of them, like Sophie Taubert and Vanessa Bell, have training in the applied arts, which I think helps them get to the idea of abstraction. But there's also important work by Lyubov Popova and Georgia O'Keeffe in the show, among others.
Now, you mentioned Vanessa Bell, who is part of the Virginia Woolf story.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of British artists here, a lot of American artists, a lot of British artists. We don't normally think of them as being part of the transition into abstract art. There are also many artists we rarely hear about. How important were the contributions of people like Lawrence Atkinson, Anton Giulio Brigaglia, Francesco Cangiulo, Alvin Langdon Coburn, Fortunato DePero, Ivan Cleun, Emilio Petoriti, who's an Argentinian artist who dabbles in abstraction?
Well, one thing we wanted to do is we wanted to mix up the major monuments as we know them today with a sense of the richness of the field, how collective this pursuit, this imperative to create abstract art was in these years. And then in terms of geography, I've always thought it's interesting that certain modern arts, the Russian avant-garde, the British modernism, have been narrated as if they exist in silos. But one of the things that we tried to do in this exhibition is just to show how interconnected these arts are and how the protagonists in the show know each other through correspondence as well as travel.
It's also interesting to note the development of artists whose work we're familiar with, like Pete Mondrian, who starts off being very cubistic before he develops that later style.
Yes. Piet Mondrian was in Paris from 1912 to 1914. He's very taken with Picasso's analytic cubist work, so much so that he never wanted to meet Picasso because he was afraid of his charismatic influence. And he felt like Picasso didn't go far enough on the path to abstraction. So in those 2 years, he worked through what Picasso was doing, trying to push it further and further. And you see that in the show.
Well, we're talking about abstraction starting somewhere around 1910, 1911. Mm-hmm. Not much afterward is World War I, which has an important influence in shaping literature. Did it play an important part in the development of abstraction as well?
It did, but it's a hard question to answer because it's not a directly causal reason for abstraction. There's abstract pictures before World War I, and certainly the lives of many of the key protagonists were impacted by the war. Leger fought, Guillaume Apollinaire fought in World War I. Sophie Teuber and Jean Arp's practice was truly shaped by the war, and they tried to create a artistic practice that would reject the pretensions of traditional painting, the kind of hubris that they felt was implicated in the war.
Well, Dadaism also grew out of
Absolutely.
A rejection to mm-hmm. the war, Arp being one of the original Dadaists. Not all the Dadaists were abstract artists,
no.
But a fair number were. They saw themselves as participating in almost an anarchistic rejection of the past?
I don't know if it was anarchistic, but it was definitely an ethos. It was an idea that traditional art making was caught up with pretensions, politics, commodity values, and that there needed to be a new type of artistic practice that rejected that, that created on a new foundation. And Arp and Sophie Teuber were key players in that.
And abstract art had a long run to a point where in the 40s and 50s, representational artists complained that they were being written out of art history. Now the world has changed again. Do you think that it ran its course?
No, not at all. I think that since we have seen the first abstract pictures 100 years ago, abstraction has never been irrelevant to modern and contemporary art making. It's a strategy that's on the table. And more than that, I think that the fact that abstract pictures became a possibility changed the possibilities for art making after that. Once that art was no longer necessarily a picture of something, but it could be an idea instead, that opens the door to all kinds of practices we're familiar with, conceptual scripts and ready-mades and performative declamations and other types of art.
And don't we also see its influence on representational artists who followed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do think it's one of those moments that once it's on the table, the world changes and there's no going back.
We have a slideshow of images from the show at the Museum of Modern Art on our show page. My great thanks to Leah Dickerman, curator in the Department of Painting and Sculpture, for coming by to talk about the show, which runs through April 15th. It's called Inventing Abstraction, 1910 to 1925.